I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard, and I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down, really. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Just last night, I was lost in the jungle with Pitfall Harry, surrounded by giant scorpions and man-eating crocodiles.
Well, Harry and I just grabbed the van, swung through the trees and over the tar pits and found the jungle treasure. It was really neat.
If you haven't met Pitfall Harry, you're missing the year's most incredible video game adventure. Pitfall for the Atari 2600 and Intellivision.
Since I met Pitfall Harry, no other man will do.
Pitfall, designed by David Crane for Activision.
Hey everybody, welcome back or to Play Retro. This might be your first time here, so I don't want to assume anything. Welcome back. I'm your host, Scott Johnson. I really wish that frog would make up its damned mind already.
Oh my gosh. And I am your other host, Brian Dunaway. And thank God David Crane gave me 3/60ths of a second to register my intent to jump these gators. Eek.
Eek is right. We're going to talk about Pitfall. Real quick, the chat room asked if the that commercial we played at the top was the one with Jack Black in it as a little kid. And the answer is correct. That is
yes,
him.
He was foreshadowing his future Jumanji gig.
Yeah, he's wearing a jungle hat thing. Mm-hmm, and it's also a fun side note. He's roughly my age, so he and I would have been that same kid.
Right. And it's funny because when you go back and watch the commercial, if you haven't seen it, look at Pitfall and Jack Black. He has all the same mannerisms.
So yeah, he's the same.
Acting he does later, he obviously either already had it all or he's just genuine guy.
He hasn't changed at all, that guy.
Mm-mm,
and he's a good actor, but he also kind of does the same thing every time, which I don't think is a problem. A lot of good actors do the same thing all the time, and I'm fine with it.
Shallow Hal made me cry.
Shallow Hal was good. You know what else was good? That one where it's based on a true story. He's a singing mortuary guy, and he gets mad at his mom and shoves her in the freezer. Kills her, puts her in the freezer. What was that called?
Right.
That deserves your attention, everybody. That's a good movie. It's weird.
Yeah,
twisted.
If you can recall the name of it.
Yeah, I don't remember anything. Something Jack Black was in. It was good. Someone in the chat. Bernie, that's it, Bernie.
Bernie, that's right.
Yeah, Bernie.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Nacho Libre is a much better movie, though, right? We can all agree on that.
Well,
it's the
we
best.
Can,
it's the pinnacle.
We can agree that that is a high point of his career, for sure.
Right.
Also, he's very good as a secondary character in Orange County. If you've never seen Orange County.
Oh, yeah. Orange County is great.
That's a great movie.
Didn't that have... old Tom Hanks' son in it?
Yeah, Tom Hanks Jr., Colin Hanks.
Yeah.
It's much younger. Yeah. Colin Hanks, and then who else? A bunch of people. It's a great movie. It's like a John Hughes movie after John Hughes died kind of movie. It's very good.
Yeah. But the big moral story is Jack Black got to play Pitfall before we all did. That jerk.
That's the guy. That's the story. You're right. Okay, here's the deal. I got to make a recommendation. It's a retro recommendation that I want to make at the top of the show. And it is such a great little surprise. I've never heard of this before. Some people are going to say, oh, I totally heard of it, Scott. You're late to the party. I understand. I may be late to the party. That often happens to me. But I found a game for the Game Boy Advance
Oh, we more Game Boy Advance love. I'm loving it. We're going to do a Game Boy Advance episode eventually,
right? Hell yeah, we are. I mean, we may do some games individually, but the system itself deserves some love. It's my favorite. I think it might be my favorite Nintendo machine. That's such a hard thing to say, but I absolutely love that device. The truth is, I guess every Nintendo machine after it should be my favorite because they're all capable of playing those games. But Nintendo didn't always put them there, so that was always a bummer.
I didn't appreciate the Game Boy Advance until we got to emulation, and then I was like, holy crap, these games are freaking amazing.
Oh, hell yeah. But I used them. I had a Advance, I had a SP, I had all that, multiple SPs.
Me too.
And I played a lot of those games in the day. Well, one game came out in 2006, 2 years after the DS was out. So nobody was thinking about their GBAs anymore. And this game comes out called Drill Dozer. In 2006.
I remember this.
And I hadn't heard of it. It's a platformer with a bunch of puzzle stuff. It's actually made by the mainline Pokemon dev is who made this. I forgot their names.
Okay. Yeah, it's got some amazing looking great art. I'm really digging it.
Oh, yeah. The art's great. Basically, you're this kid and this girl in a mech, like a little round mech. And your job is to go save the world as a little girl in a mech. And story doesn't really matter. But the gameplay... Man, I have not had this much fun with an old game in a bit. And I've been
Is there some digging and some cavern exploration?
Not really caverns so much, but you'd use this drill. Or this mech you're in has this drill. It's a reversible drill. It goes two different directions. And also, you're always trying to find these gears to improve its performance so you can cut through bigger stuff, harder to get places, that kind of thing. So it's got this progression. Almost every level has this like three gear progression thing you got to deal with. You got a home base. Think of it as like Knight Rider. You got the guy in the semi running shit, you know, and then you got you.
So you're Devin. You got your Devin there.
Yeah, you got your Devin. And then you're Michael Knight, basically, and you got your mech, which is basically the car kit. Anyway, it's not really like that, but kind of. Because between missions, you go back
to them. Why is he so mad? Why is the eyebrow guy so mad?
Oh, he's a pissed off mother effer. He's just mad. He's just pissed. Yeah. He's always pissed. I don't know what his problem is. He's always worried that things aren't going right. But anyway, you get upgrades to your Mac. You do these incredible, amazing levels that never overstay their welcome, but have some tricky puzzle stuff, tricky moments of like, how am I getting through here? Oh, right. Okay. I figured it out on my own kind of feeling. I love games that do that to you. It's so good. So I'm going to say this. As far as I know, you can't find this anywhere. I tried to find it on eBay. Nobody's selling it. At the time, the reviews were over the moon. Everyone loved it. So it was well regarded. But all of us had moved on to the next piece of Nintendo hardware. And we all thought, whatever. This happens sometimes. You know, as they continue to put out games, you forget that that's happening. And it turns out maybe the best platformer on the device, with very few exceptions, was this. And it just came out so late, nobody played it or heard about it. What was I going to say? I'm going to beat this thing. I'm going to play the whole damn game.
You weren't kidding, boy. They want a pretty penny for this on the eBays.
Yeah, it's expensive if you can even find it there. It's so good. I don't know if anyone out there listening played it. If you did, tell us your story. I'd love to hear what you think of it. But and at this point, because Nintendo doesn't make anything available to anyone unless they feel like it, just go and do this one. Go play this on your RetroPie.
Just go get your emulation on. Get your retro art, your Retron 5. Plug in your SD card there with the ROM and play it.
Yeah, Nintendo put it on sale tomorrow on the Switch, I'd buy it. I'd just straight up buy it, even though I'm about to beat it on emulation because I'm happy to pay for it. They just don't make that easy.
The biggest reason why there's still as much piracy as there is. Anytime you put things where we can't access it, it's just gonna justify people.
It's not just justify. It's like they're making that you put it in the vault. You give people no choice if they want to enjoy this content, especially those who already paid for it, have a broken cart, can't do anything with it. It's dumb. We live in 2022. You're capable.
This is cool enough that I would be willing to pay upwards of $14.99, or if you put it into a collection, I'd probably play it too.
I would pay $15 for this game. It's as good as any platformer I've played in the last 5 years. It's that good. So highly recommend it. Play it if you can somewhere. It's called Drill Dozer, and I can't say enough about it. It's really worth playing. Okay, Brian, I heard you got your Atari VCS. Did that actually happen? What happened there?
I did get my Atari VCS. I ordered it last week after we decided we're going to do Pitfall, and it arrived a couple of days ago, and I haven't been able to hook it up because I thought the back of my RCA Color Track 2000 had the VHF two prongers. It was just a UHF. Didn't realize it until I looked back there. Unfortunate, because you know this runs on VHF, which is two channel three or channel four, right? So I had to order a thing, and it hasn't arrived yet. So I do have my old, here it is, that's the four switcher right there, the wood grain. It's not the Darth Vader one. It's the wood grain with the four switches. And I also ordered a copy of Pitfall right there. Got the cart. So I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but it is on the list. Came in very good condition, and I'm pretty stoked to do it. I think I only paid like, this Pitfall cart wasn't too bad. It was, I want to say I paid like 10 or 15, because you got to remember, they made a lot of these. They made a lot of the Pitfalls.
Still, that's pretty good money. I would have thought they would have been less, because there were so many made, but maybe.
Yeah, I might have been, if I'd have had more time to kind of really, you know, pick, but I actually went to eBay and I said, who's closest to me? Who could get this shipped? And there was somebody in South Carolina that shipped it to me. I think I probably could have got it cheaper, but it might not have been here in time for the show. And then I wouldn't be able to go, look what I got, Scott. I got me a cart, and it's a Pitfall, and it's upside down here. But
is that going to play? Do you know?
It's going to totally play. I have total faith in it. And as soon as I get, like I said, as soon as I get my two prong plug to the coaxial, which I'll be able to plug into the cable input on my RCA Track 2000 CRT. I will be able to do that. I'll switch the thing right from TV over to computer.
Computer. Computer.
Computer on. And I will get right. I'll get right on it, man. I'm right on it. I'm on it. I'm so excited.
I'm excited. Well, this VCS.
Oh,
I'm
wait.
Well, what? What are you going to say? Go ahead.
I got to show you something else.
Let's see.
I didn't show you all the cool stuff. Oh, my God. I'm all tangled up.
Okay. Yeah, this is the problem. Now he's gonna spend the whole week tweaking his setup so he's not tangled up again. Okay, what do we got here?
So they've sent four of these six of these controllers, these sweet old school controllers, and it didn't come with any carts, but it did come with a whole bunch of booklets. I got manuals out the butt. And a matter of fact, I have an Activision manual that came out in 81 that kind of brags about what they're doing. And it has the Gang of Four in here.
So it's like a promo.
And it's pretty freaking sweet.
Like a little promo book where they're trying to make
it. Yeah, a little promo book games. Right there.
Yeah.
There's you guys right there.
Yeah, look
there
at those guys. The lead designers. The leading mustaches of the business. Look at those guys. Woo.
Hubba. There's actually a fifth guy here. He was brand new in 81. And he was, and it says here, let's read exactly what it says if I can. It says that Steve Cartwright, the newest member of the Activision design team, Steve has just finished an exciting and original game idea, is targeted for release in 1982. Watch for it. I wonder what he did.
Oh, is it this game? Is it Pitfall Harry?
It's definitely not Pitfall, because our man of the hour, he did it.
Oh.
Pitfall. That's right. David Crane.
Okay.
Not the co-creator of Friends.
No.
You 90s children. No, no. David Crane, lead developer at Atari during the late 70s.
Here's one
of the lead programmers.
Here's what he made.
Bible Adventures features three games in one cartridge.
Mm-hmm. Just kidding. He didn't. He didn't. I like to drink from taters.
He did that real good.
All right. Well, that's awesome. Well done. Continue to keep us abreast of what happens on that front, will you?
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be a... I'll be honest with you though. I've been waiting and kind of debating on whether or not to get an Atari 2600, because I didn't remember very many games that I could play for very long on it. But after playing Pitfall this past week, I think it's a thing.
Ugh.
I
respect it. It's an important era. I respect what it was, what it brought, what it did to the business, like all that. I'm not going to pretend like the 2600 wasn't important, because it was, but I find the games unplayable at this point.
I find most of the games unplayable, but I find Pitfall 1 and Pitfall 2 eternally entertaining. And you see my grabber ball, by the way?
I see your grabber ball button. Yeah.
Like that. It's a big old grabber ball, goes right on top of there.
Pretty hot.
Yeah. Pac-Man clone right there.
You know what else I like? Oh, yeah, for sure. What else I like is that they keep using the imagery from Atari logos in the Blade Runner 2049. I freaking love that.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's good stuff.
Love that they
did
that.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, first movie's great too. Okay, check this out, you guys. Our big game of the week.
Shall we play a game?
Sure, we'll play a really old game called Pitfall. Why not? Pitfall Harry and the Adventures of Pitfall.
After Scott badmouths it, stupid Atari games. And now Pitfall.
Pitfall.
Coming your way.
That's what I'm saying. I have huge respect for Pitfall because I think it's a really important game in the history of games. And I think without it, one could argue that we have a real stall in terms of, you know, of what a platformer is. Like this pushed so much forward in terms of what a platformer can be. It wasn't even such a thing then. Right. But not only that, the game introduced this concept, which still is impressive that it happened on an Atari device, that the game features screens that are different every time you play the game. So when you cross the screen and you go to the next one, you don't actually know what's next. There's no pattern. There's no
that's not right.
Is that not true? I thought there was always it was randomization. No,
I thought the same thing.
Not randomization, but like random.
Me too.
Were preset screens, but they were randomly ordered. No?
No, they weren't shuffled.
What?
No, that's what I thought too.
What?
I kept thinking they were shuffled. What? I know. I blew my mind too, Scott. I was the same way last week, and then I played the shit, excuse my language, out of some Pitfall, and you can map the whole thing. They've got maps.
What?
They've got maps for the whole freaking thing.
Are you sure they aren't just maps for this level has a hole that opens and shuts? This level doesn't. Like that?
No.
Really?
It is a predetermined preset map.
I gave this game too much credit. I was like, hey, remember games that did this before Diablo? And me neither. And then I'm like, wait a minute, Pitfall did.
They didn't have the bits and the bytes to process. The CPU was just trying to render stuff. It didn't have time to do stuff like thought puzzles, like, hey, let's shuffle these things. It just didn't have it.
That's a bummer. Maybe 2 did then? Did 2 have that?
As far as I know, 2 did not either. That was something that came along later on other systems because the Atari 2600, the VCS, just not capable to do it all. I mean, I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying not likely.
Not likely. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I never played 2. I played some this week, but I never played it prior to this week. And I played 1 and 2 this week, and it's Well, here's what it sounds. First of all, here's what it sounds like. Now, mind you, I went and edited this a little bit I can't read.
So it wouldn't destroy your ears?
No, so that it had less space between sounds because the game is silent with very few exceptions. When you jump, pick up a thing, or swing, that's it.
Right. That's true. Or die.
Yeah. No music, no nothing. So I compressed this a little bit to be a little more close together. But anyway, here you go. That's swinging. And that swinging is basically
that's the Tarzan. And for those who are super old, you may remember that was the Tarzan yell.
Yeah. I don't even think you have to be that old. I think that's like when, you know what? Hey, kids, remember when you saw Return of the Jedi for the first time and Chewbacca swung across the thing in the jungle there or the forest, the Endor forest?
You're saying it was the Chewbacca effect. And not the Tarzan. I got you.
Well, I think this was clearly inspired by Tarzan since it came before that that game or that movie.
Well, actually, it did. No, the Star Wars has already been out, right? Which one was Empire? When was it that Chewbacca?
Not Empire. It happened in the third one, so episode
it's
6.
The third one,
And that came out a year after this?
Yeah, that's probably right.
Something like that.
That's probably right.
Anyway.
Is when Pitfall 1 came out. Now, you're not playing the Dragnet theme. The part where you die?
Oh, no. Well, I have this here. Hold on. I got this sound. Right. That's just picking shit up. I don't know where
that. Yeah. That's when you pick up bars of gold or diamond rings, bags of money. Not when you pick up the scorpion. I know he looks like he can pick him up and pet him. You can't. He'll stab you right in the face.
Well, let me find. You know what? I got the death sound here somewhere. Let me find it. Here we go. 2600 death. Death fall death sound, whatever that means. Okay, here we go. I'm playing it. Let's see what we get. Oh, geez.
Welcome, Dragnet or Donkey Kong.
It is Donkey Kong, isn't it? Yeah.
Miyamoto was a bit, Miyamoto and those guys, they were inspired by Pitfall. David Crane was doing something, making an amazing game. I mean, with modern sensibilities, we look at it and go, oh, how very rudimentary. And it was, because it was written in assembly language and it was, you know, it was about as basic as you could get.
Yeah.
But I think the more I played it, the more I appreciated it, because there was things I either just didn't register as a kid. First of all, didn't look at the manual at all at Pitfall. I just, you know, picked up the controller and started playing. So I didn't realize you had 20 minutes. Like, I never, or at least never triggered with my mind that it was like, oh, you have 20 minutes. Because I've never made it 20 minutes in Pitfall. I always kill my, you know, three possible men well before that. And then, you know, the scoring is kind of different. Yeah. That's a different way to do things, too. And 255 screens? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I learned... Dude, the manual is super short, but it tells you a ton of stuff. I can imagine that David Crane was a teacher in high school before he did this. Because in the manual, it tells you, and you may have done this or maybe thought about it, you always go left to right, right? That's what you do.
That's what you're supposed to do, but not this game.
To right. Yeah. If you, I was thinking, okay, but you could go right to left. And I thought, okay, well, that's got to be wrong because I'm going to get penalized for this because now I'm running with the logs when I'm going to the left. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to hit me or run. They don't because you're just running with them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to run into a wall. Mm-hmm. There's no way I can make it through this circular map. Wrong. You can just go left. And David Crane tells you that.
Yeah.
In the manual.
Yeah.
He says, you should just go to the left. And I'm like, oh, man, if I had just looked at the manual, I could have saved my life.
This is the problem. Kids didn't read the manual back then. They thought manuals were books. They didn't want to read that.
Yeah. So high school teacher move there is like, sure.
Oh, hell yeah.
You can pass. But if you just read the directions, it'd be a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah, maybe just read the directions is really the lesson here. And I feel like I've learned a little something just talking about it. It's a weird game, and I want to not let this go. Activision, which had other products and other stuff that they created for the Atari, the 2600 and beyond, this is still, I would argue, their primordial moment of DNA. Like, this is them going, Activision will be a name you'll hear for a very long time, for good or ill, but yeah.
This is their first big hit.
Yeah.
It's monster. It stayed at number one with a rocket for like 60-something weeks. It was the top seller, and it ended up being the second biggest seller of all time for the Atari 2600.
You know what I loved about it, and I'm showing the chat now? This is one of the games I remember had the logo of the company what published it on the screen all the time. It never went away. That Activision was down there.
What a big old... So I learned... Once again, another week of Brian discovering crap he had no previous knowledge of, and now we'll drop it as though it has been a part of me my entire life. Activision, the four lead developers at Atari during the late 80s, got fed up and went and talked to the head honcho at that time. Yeah. We were under corporate rule at this point, right? Mm-hmm. We'd already been bought out. And so they said, give us credit in the games or we're out. And so they said, yeah, we don't care about you. You're not important. Top four developers at Atari. See ya.
Such a weird thing back then that nobody cared or nobody in corporate situations thought the devs mattered. That's so weird to me.
Yeah.
That's like saying, we don't care what director made Goodfellas. Just say it was a guy. It doesn't matter if it was Scorsese. That's so weird.
I think if Nolan Bushnell had not sold the company, I think they could have convinced him. But, you know, Nolan was gone by the time the mass exodus of the top four lead developers left. By the way, I don't know if you know anything about that story.
He came from here, dude. He's a Utah legend. I'm all about the Nolan Bushnell stories.
I don't know if you know about the Gang of Four and them leaving Atari, but essentially, like I said, they wanted more money, more credit, because, you know, they were creating something artistic. They said no, and they said, all right, we're out, and then we're gonna be a third-party developer, the first third-party developer, and we're going to put our big old Activision right there across the bottom. You're welcome, Activision. Second, Atari. You have
to look at us all the time, and we're going to make... the biggest seller this machine may ever see. You know? And we're going to make it.
The only thing bigger was the Pac-Man.
Oh, Pac-Man, yeah. That
but I think that was all sold in the first week.
That was such a poosh port, too. It was so bad. At least Pitfall was like a genuinely good game and still kind of is.
Pitfall is still, like I said, I wasn't going to give the game a chance. And I was like, you know what? What if I didn't look at it as trying to revisit my nostalgia, but looked at it as a challenge? Like, could I speed run this thing? And you can. I think the record's like 16 minutes or something, yeah. Which kind of blew my mind, too, because I'm like, wow. I mean, 16 minutes being the fastest, and they give you 20? Whew.
Yeah.
That's a tight margin, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when I looked at it as a challenge and actually started trying to go through the screens, it really sucked me in. It even after all these years, after 40 years, people, of right now, is 40 years old. 50-year-olds. Yeah. Atari in 40 years for
it's okay. It's okay. I'm not gonna praise this thing outside of like it is massively influential. What was happening behind the scenes changed the business, and we're still kind of in that mode now. Like those things that changed are still in place now. It matters who develops your games. It matters right. You give them credit all the way down to the game testers and the guy who textured a tree. Like you, that stuff was forever changed. The idea of a third party publisher and developer is now not just normal. It is the standard, which I think means normal. So I don't know why I said it two ways, but you know what I mean? I'll give them all the credit in the world, but if I'm going to sit here and say, oh, and also Pitfall's really fun to play. This is the problem. It's a victim of its own history because it starts getting everybody else going, ooh, and then, you know, Miyamoto makes something like, you know, a side-scrolling Mario game, and all bets are off. You're like, oh my gosh, this is the future. And then a million great side-scrolling, you know, Mario likes happen, and some are great, and right. Some are okay, whatever. But everybody's going to, forget about Pitfall, because even though you're the grandpa, you're the old guy on the side of the room that smells a little funny. Nobody cares anymore. You move on.
You're not wrong, people. That's the general consensus that Pitfall is worth. We've talked about as much Pitfall as you can, unless you listen to the GDC. I think that's what it is, right? The game developer conference with there's a post. They do postmortems on a lot of these game developments, like, you know, how did it happen and what went on. So they always invite, you know, the developers or somebody important to the team. And David Crane has a great one on Pitfall, and he gets really deep in the weeds about everything Pitfall. And once I got that deep, I think it maybe colored what I was looking at.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed just futzing around with the Pitfall. I spent like two streaming days just playing the first Pitfall. I mean,
that's a lot.
That's a lot. But it was mostly me just trying to see how far I could get, which started bringing back the memories of what I used to do on Atari, which was, you know, what's the high score? Mm. What's the point here and how far can I make it? And I would stay up all night playing these games, trying to roll something. You know, it's like any score that I could roll, I wanted to roll it.
Yeah.
And when Pitfall 2 Lost Caverns came around in 1984, I kind of hated it. But let me tell you.
Check it out. You know what this is? This is that same piece of hardware. Suddenly, it can play music. I don't know why the first game didn't have
it. It's almost the same piece of hardware. Inside the cart is a special chip.
Oh, is there? I didn't know this. Is that true? Whoa.
It's true. There is a special chip right in there so that Crane could make use of a little bit more memory and could give us an actual soundtrack instead of that morbid, dead Pitfall 1 sound that only has the morning.
Yeah. So this version, what you're hearing. Okay, so that's that. Now I want you to hear a remix version that I found today that I really like. Check it out. I think that guy's saying big butt, big butt, big butt.
It sounds like, oh my God, now I'm totally, what was the frog?
Oh,
what was that guy?
But the one that showed his wiener, that one?
Yeah, that
wiener
guy.
Dog, or wiener, it was like some European thing, right?
Frog wiener, yeah. You're singing a Frogger.
This is a total house thing. Anyway, Now, you know, two's fine, whatever. They tried to do some innovations. They had some scrolling vertical levels that they added. They had interesting
flying balloons. They had, oh my God, I feel like, oh my God, why am I, this is, you are me 1 week ago. Mm. You are, I've for some reason, I've been in a Pitfall pressure cooker and my mind has completely been changed because I'm like, holy hell, it's got checkpoints.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yep. Video games with checkpoints. No one did that until it did it. You know?
Yeah. And I'm like, it has got a banded sky in the background and it's got vertical. It's got water that moves.
Yeah. The little underwater, underground water stuff. It's crazy that that's even in there. Yeah. I agree. It's a real jump in a lot of ways. Like a jump forward.
It's like, it's not a Pitfall. It's a jump fall. It's got balloons, man. You can fly in this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's water and electric eels. Oh my gosh. I
need you to be up here with me on Pitfall 2.
Pitfall 2 is impressive for where it is and where it came out on. And by the way, this was all, we haven't said much about this. The commercial we played did, but these games, or at least the first one, I'm not sure about the second one, were on the Intellivision as well.
Right.
And my friend,
the first one was only on the Atari 2600. The second one did make it to
The commercial claims it was on the Intellivision as well. I wonder if it was later.
Well, that's
what the commercial says. But maybe remember that wrong? Hold on. Let me see.
You might be right.
Man would do.
Pitfall, designed by David Crane for Activision.
No,
a
not
giant
that.
Scorpions and man-eating crocodiles.
Well, Harry and I just grabbed where the tar pits and found them.
Really neat. If you haven't met Pitfall, Harry, you're missing the year's most incredible video game adventure. Pitfall for the Atari 2600 and Intellivision.
See?
Look at you. It's the Intellivision. Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if, I mean, again, I never played it on there, so I don't know. But my friend had an Intellivision, and I kind of remember him having Pitfall. But these things all look the same, just shit graphics and, you know, 2D, this and that. And it's hard to...
There wasn't much wiggle room. I mean, those were all basically, you know, the same, you know. There was not much wiggle room there.
Yeah.
So you got what you got.
Now, let's move forward and look at the...
Now, 2 had some different things. I think it was for the Commodore 64. It had different color palettes on different platforms. There was all kinds of things going on there.
Yeah, that thing is... I'm looking at video of the 2600, but the Commodore 64 version of Pitfall 2, I think, looks real nice. Looks good.
It does. It looks... they had a little more room to wiggle. They had... At this point in time, did Commodore 64 have like a dedicated sound chip and stuff? Am I remember that correctly, or am I totally wrong? I can't remember.
I don't remember. Maybe it did.
That was a big leap because you forget that the Commodore 64 lived throughout, you know, for almost 10 years, all the way through the 80s there, and was still, you know, viable even towards the end of its lifespan. So,
dude, I love my Commodore. Yeah. Freaking loved it. I love that new mini one you sent me. But yeah, there's like texture on the water. The water's got like weird animation that this Atari one doesn't. Like,
yeah, it's got like dithering.
Yeah,
like, dithering's a good love word. It. Yeah. Oh, there's no in Pitfall 2. There's no lives. You just have one, and if you die, you get zapped back. You have to do a walk of shame, which is more like a float Pitfall walk of shame back to the previous checkpoint and. Is so painful because you can't speed through it. You just kind of like go through the walls like some kind of ghost.
Now let's
sucks all your points away. It's a really sad feeling.
Let's jump ahead a few years. The year is 1986, and you might
that's like 4 years after the first Pitfall,
which isn't a lot. In my mind, like it is in the rapid increase of power and technology back then. But in my mind, 4 years is nothing.
Plus, we'd had a complete complete gaming collapse in '83. So this is NES trying to reset the counter.
Yeah, for sure. So the NES is out, and they put out a game called Super Pitfall, not to be confused with anything that would be on the Super Nintendo. It's just called Super Pitfall on the NES. And it visually has no connection to the games it's based on. Yeah, it's basically Mario in a hat. He's got a mustache. He's got the stupid little worker hat. He's even wearing like a worker vest. Like everything about him is knockoff Mario.
Jump is so jump, man. I mean, look at it. He's just a bing.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. Here's some of that.
But the snakes make me laugh.
Here's some of that sound. every Nintendo game ever made. It sounds like that.
Come on, this is a Mario game, and you just called it Pitfall. Get out of my face.
It's a little much to me. To me, it doesn't adhere to whatever made Pitfall Pitfall. And so you could have called this anything. You could have called this Larry Harry and his stupid snake obsession or whatever. You could do whatever you want.
Mario's good time adventure in Egypt, because it's not a freaking safari. It's in freaking Egypt.
It's weird.
It's not even in a jungle. He's in a desert right now. Come on. Yeah,
and he can shoot stuff. Pitfall Harry never could do. So
no. Later on he could, but no, that's probably the only thing they maybe carried forward.
Yeah. If you're gonna call
Didn't like this one, Scott.
No,
people
it's not good.
Did not care for the Super Pitfall.
I don't know if it stands. I didn't play this one this week, so I couldn't tell you. How's it play? Is it all right?
It does not play well. All the way from the biggest. Yeah, I can get past the visual stuff and the themes and stuff. That's fine. Different reimagining, but it's the sluggishness of the controls. It just doesn't feel finished. It just all feels like a very weak attempt. It's not good.
Okay. Well, I kind of thought after that things would fall off and we'd never see another Pitfall game again.
That's it. It's over. He's gone to the grave. He's fell in his last pit. He's fell in the quicksand and he's not getting back out. Poor old Pitfall Harry.
Yep. Guess what, though? We would have been wrong about that because this happened. Oops, that's the wrong video. Hold on, chat.
Thank you, Cartoon.
Yeah, thanks, Cartoon. So what you got here is Pitfall, the Mayan Adventure. All right. Yes, and this is a Genesis. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. What are you going to say?
No, it's one of my favorites. It's for the Genesis, man.
Yeah. The Genesis Super NES game, ended up on 32X as well. I have that version, here. So I played that a little bit this week. Really any different. It's got a little better sound. That's about it.
I would love to see that. Did you record any of that?
I didn't record it, no, but I don't know. You will not be.
I need to send you a capture card for doing that kind of little thing. I got like a little thing. I got an adapter.
Well, I can cap this. I can screen cap this stuff. I just didn't do it. Okay. But the reason I didn't do it isn't because of that. I don't know why I didn't do it. The main reason, though, is I just didn't care that much. But I can tell you
tell
with some authority.
How you really feel about Pitfall, Scott.
I can tell you with some authority that Pitfall, the Mayan Adventure on 32X is really just the Genesis version with better sound. That's it. There's really no difference.
Yeah. We know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because we had the sound chip from the Sony, the creator of Sony. So we can't compete with that.
No, how are you going to compete with that? You can't do that. Can't
compete with that.
But
he's throwing stuff here. We're back.
He's got a
whip. There's some things I like about this one.
No, there's nothing wrong with this game. That's what I'm going to say. Yeah. I actually think this is the first proper good Pitfall game. And it holds up. It's actually still fun. And it's got these crazy levels, great graphics, amazing animation for its time. Feels wholly original and interesting. It doesn't feel like a million other games. It's legit good. And I would recommend, if you don't have a way to play it, emulate this thing and play it. It's good. It's a good game.
And it's more like, okay, so the original Pitfall was inspired by Indiana Jones. They've said that plenty of times. And so, but it didn't feel real Indiana Jones. Pitfall didn't feel like that way. This feels like they said, we're going to make an Indiana Jones thing, and it feels more Indiana Jones than it does Pitfall, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, for sure. This definitely adheres more to that vibe that they were aiming for in the original but couldn't achieve given the limits. But this game is much more. And when did this see? This came out in 94.
So we're 94. It was 94.
So we're barely just 10 years, 11, 12, maybe almost 12 years later, which is huge jump in capabilities in that 12 years.
We have animated sprites. We have really good, complex animated sprites, very cartoony. And there are some cartoon influences here. You may remember the cartoon. When was it? 1983 or something, when the cartoon came out and Pitfall Harry had a niece and a pet tiger of some sort? Or why was that thing? Did you watch any of those?
I never watched any of that. I had no idea there was even a show. So this is good.
Oh, God. You should definitely try to find at least a little audio from the original Pitfall cartoon. So there's a couple things I like about this one. I don't know if you noticed.
See what it's doing right now? Right now, he basically entered the old game world as part of the game.
Yes.
So it's very self-referential, very fourth wall, this game.
I love that.
You literally had to go through segments that were like, oh, I have to play the old game here.
Look how good it looks.
Yeah. I mean,
the colors look really good on that.
It's more vibrant for sure. But they even put the little logo down there and the 20-minute timer and all that stuff, which in the main game, the Mayan game, does not exist. This is all bullshit. But they put it in just to kind of say, hey, we're not forgetting our roots here, which I respect. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I love the rainbow logo they used in Pitfall 2 for Activision. I think that one looks delicious at the bottom of the screen. This was kind of bland in the first one, but in Pitfall 2, I really dug it. It just makes it feel like it's got quality. Activision used to be something that I really loved.
No, they were serious. They were like, hey, what if we made a cool thing and we're gonna make the thing fans really want? And they did that, I think, with this 16-bit game. I think Activision, you know, say what you want about their current behavior. Strong legacy in the old
different
days.
People. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's only Activision's been purchased and, you know, and it's not the same people. It's not the same Activision. So it's like Atari isn't, the same people that started the company, the people we fell in love with. It eventually got sold, bought, restructured. Another thing about this one, this one actually gave me the feels, this Pitfall, the Mayan Adventure, because this is the first, I don't remember them having souls, but whenever you kill anything here, instead of the character just disappearing off screen, a lot of them disappear like in a puff of smoke.
That's like shaped like been a skull. Killed,
and like there's, they got souls. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm killing things with souls?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I want that.
Like I say, totally worth playing. You got a minute and you're like, this looks all right. I mean, you're not seeing this if you're just listening at home, but it's a legitimately cool game.
It's cartoony. Mm-hmm. It's super Sega Genesis. If you played any Genesis games, I mean, it's undeniably of that platform.
It's definitely on the SNES as well, though. I don't know what the differences are, but they're...
If you've ever played Aladdin, it gives me the Aladdin feels.
Yeah, highly animated, lots of movement that's not just your standard run stuff. Like, he has idle animation and... You know, some of the things that are clearly above and beyond. The color depth is better than the Genesis should be able to show. Like, I'm not saying it's actually deeper color depth, but that thing was limited to 64 colors, and it doesn't feel like it. It feels like a proper console here.
Yeah. So, and I also love the fact that you got different levels of health, so you're not like you're dead. Your life is gone. You have like this alligator that's slowly creeping up on you. Every time you get injured a little bit, it gets a little closer and its mouth gets a little bit bigger and it gets a little bit kind of makes you a little nervous. Makes you a little nervous,
that's what you want. Now, something really weird happened after this, and what that is something called Pitfall 3D Beyond the Jungle for the PlayStation 1 and Game Boy, but I wouldn't count that one, and you'll hear why it's weird. Okay, first
we're gonna hear two celebrities right this week. We're hearing two celebrities.
Yeah, so don't give it away. Here it is. I'm going to play it. Well, first, here's the music. A little more adventure-y. You know, it's like a little montage at the beginning. It's fine. Yes. It is what it is.
Big adventure. Big adventure.
And then you hear this.
I don't look for adventure. Sometimes it just finds me. Like when I was swinging through the South American jungle and I saw this glimmer. Yeah, a crystal. And when I grabbed it, a rift opened up. Out popped, Mira. Cute little Moku. She started gabbing on about this pure energy stuff called Lucence that comes in two flavors. The blue stuff's good, and the red's no cherry. Now, one Moku got a little too excited with the red Lucence and turned into the Scourge.
All right, so that gives you a taste. It's Bruce Campbell, and I had no idea until I was doing research for this that was him. It's crazy.
I learned so much this past week. Once again, me too. No idea Bruce Campbell ever did a Pitfall game, much less for the PlayStation 1 and the Game Boy. I totally missed out, man. Yeah. I remember seeing Pitfall 3D, but once again, until this past week, I didn't have much love for Pitfall. I was more like, you know, down here and at the bottom going, it's a thing.
Yeah.
But I've learned to love Pitfall after this past week, and Bruce Campbell just keeps on entertaining me.
Well, he's always great. This is a bad game. I'm going to put that out there. 3D, Pitfall 3D is not a good game. Okay.
Beyond the Jungle. Oh, did we mention earlier that was I think the Mayan Adventure was not even Pitfall Harry. It was Pitfall Harry Jr.
Oh, but I didn't realize that. I didn't know. I thought it was the same Pitfall Harry. Oh, no, because his dad gets kidnapped. You're right. In the opening scene. Right. Yeah.
And so Pitfall Harry is back for his 3D debut. in 1998, about 3 years after the PlayStation launched, and right in the middle of the Game Boy Advance. That's right, a Crave Entertainment made a Game Boy Advance version of this.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good.
Is it?
It's pretty good.
I mean, that's a 2D game. There's no 3D in that.
I think both. I like both of them. Yeah. I like both flavors here.
They're both.
I really enjoyed this.
Well, this PS1 game is actually bad, so I hope the GBA game is better.
I enjoyed it.
Really?
I enjoyed it.
This game's bad, dude.
I enjoy Pitfall 1, so you know you gotta grade on a curve there, my friends.
I guess so. Yeah, you are. That's a really good point.
Right.
But whatever. They were getting their Indiana Jones on.
Version, so that's got to say something.
Yeah, that's true. I'm all for more Pitfall, Harry. You should do something modern with him. Nothing's going on right now, as far as I know.
Right. I mean, because we've got things like Uncharted, so we've kind of filled that area, right? I mean, and so unless you're like an indie developer who wants simple gameplay of simple platforming and, you know, treasure hunting, we've kind of done it to death, really.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. I don't know if Pitfall Harry would be welcomed with open arms even today.
Now, some of you may be saying, well, wait, Scott, wasn't there another game? There was.
Yes.
And guess what game this was? This game came out in the year 2004 for the Game Boy Advance and for the Xbox, GameCube, PS2, and GBA. And it sounded a little like this. Whoops. Where'd it go? I lost it. Shit.
It says loading screen.
Where is it? No, that's PS1. No, that's not it. Oh, here. No. Where is it? No, I don't.
Oh, wow. That's Pitfall 2. That's
I screwed up my files. It's in here somewhere. No, that's Pitfall 2. I can't find it. Anyway, it's a 3DO game. Or 3DO. It's a GameCube game. Why am I saying 3DO? I don't know.
It's a GameCube game.
It's a GameCube game, which is where I captured it. It's fine. It's a lot more cartoony. Big heads, you know, goofy-looking characters. It's fine.
I didn't like this one as much.
It's not Bruce Campbell anymore. That's for sure. Somebody else.
It's weird that I didn't like this one as much. I don't know why. Maybe because it was in 2004. You know, I love my GameCube. I absolutely freaking love it. And my PS2. But I just couldn't find the love for it because... So, Beyond the Jungle.
Yeah.
I got to Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
He made it entertaining for them to talk.
Yeah.
I don't think I need my Pitfall to talk. But if you are... gonna have to do Bruce Campbell. If not, don't do what they did, which is really weird. I mean, you have to jump from a plane when you start, and then the two people that you're with, they're kind of quest givers.
Mm-hmm.
They fall and break their legs.
Yeah, they do.
And I'm like, okay. And I don't know. It was okay. There's some jumping over pits with teeth.
Yeah,
that's something.
That's Pitfall Harry, I guess, doing pits.
Yes, that's the pits.
Yeah. What I'd say is this. We were still kind of experimenting with platformers, didn't really know what we were doing. They tried to make things a little more cinematic here. I think they kind of failed.
It kind of reminds me of like a Crash Bandicoot game, but not as fun.
I like Crash Bandicoot.
I could use a hub. I could use a hub world.
I'm going to play that Crash remakes on the, I got the PlayStation 5 PS Plus Extra, whatever the hell it's called, the middle one.
Right, right.
And that new remastered collection's in there. I'm going to have to give that a shot.
Yeah.
Maybe that's about the time. Well, these do have teeth. That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it's cool, but it's a lot cooler to look at and watch somebody else play than it is to actually play. The controls are very, in my opinion, very clunky. And I don't know. Like with the original Pitfall, I had mentioned at the top of the show that David Crane gave me 3/360th of a second to you know, correct course when I was jumping.
Yeah.
Which it still makes the game hard. But sometimes I was like, I don't even understand what I just did. I jumped just like I did the previous time, and I didn't make it.
I feel you. It's not their best outing. And it is also the last outing. It's the last thing they did.
It killed it.
04 was the last game for Pitfall Harry of any sort. Pitfall died essentially then. However.
Yeah. You had to backtrack to find any more Pitfall actionist type, right?
Yeah, and I'm not convinced they couldn't reboot it. Like, go for it. Like,
I just don't think that. I mean, at its core, Pitfall Harry is not very
good.
Much. I mean, unless you really you know, embrace the campiness. Like, you know, Activision, when you played Pitfall, the first one, it was a big throwback to the serial age, which Indiana Jones was as well. And they embraced the whole thing. As a matter of fact, if you scored over 20,000 points, you could take a photo, like, you know, with your Polaroid camera of the points. And so you didn't have Photoshop. And you could send that into Activision. And then they'd send you a patch, you know, and it was just this... It kind of just worked because it was kind of like a reboot even then. So I don't know.
For clarity, when you say they sent a patch, you're talking about one you'd iron onto your shirt, right?
Right. Or pin. I'm not sure if it was iron on or not. It looks interesting. I looked online to see if I could find one because I would definitely be interested in getting one of these patches. By the way, this dude, I think in 2015, I'll have to see if I can find the story again. I kind of read it in passing. This guy... At like I said, 2015, he finally got 20,000 points, and since there was no expiration listed on the contest to get your patch, he sent in to Activision his score to see if he could get a patch. I don't think he ever got the patch.
Wait, he just sent the score, like wrote it down?
No, he took a picture of it.
Oh, he did actually take a picture of it.
Yeah.
He's just doing it way later. So. Oh man, that's great.
Yeah, so that arrived a little late in the mail, and a couple of regime changes later.
Yeah, multi-billions of dollars of capital later, and,
Right, but I really want one. Do you have a picture or anything you can show? I mean, let me see if I can look it up here. I found them. They have them on, there's a few on eBay. It's just, I love it. Pitfall.
Oh, I love that stuff, too. What a dumb, awesome thing that is. That's great. But nobody, you can send him to Activision today, and what's Bobby Kotick going to do, wipe his ass with it? He's not going to do anything.
It's a cool story, bro.
Yeah, that's great. I'm too busy making billions over here doing real video games.
I just sent you a link to that's just the Google search link. Anyway, yeah, that's that you can get there from it. But yeah, that's the Pitfall Harry Explorer Club patch. There were two types. There was one that was a triangle and had this great rainbow following behind Pitfall Harry with a compass, and it is so freaking 80s with this green rainbow colors. This beautiful patch. I'd love to have one of these. I just got to get a blue jean jacket.
Yeah, big money again on eBay. Jeez Louise. They're expensive.
Yeah, look at that. Isn't that sweet? Triangle. I love it, man.
I dare you to buy one. I
support that every day.
I dare you. Buy one.
I will, but see, that's the problem. On eBay, they're going for about $60. I'm thinking I might have to do like a parody patch. Play retro or something.
Yeah, we could do that. Nobody would know what it is because everyone hates Pitfall, but yeah, we could totally do that. Yeah.
Play Retro's Explorers deal.
Yeah, Explorers deal.
Can we call it Club?
Yeah, Club. We could call it Club. Why not?
Yeah, but they weren't the only one. I mean, they did. There was more Activision stuff, like Enduro Roadbusters had patches. So I want to collect all the Activision patches I can, is probably two.
Do you think Pitfall Harry deserves to be called the first true platformer of video games? Do you think that's
yes, even though
thing?
It's not technically true, I think it is the I think we talk about this from time to time. I think it's the one. I mean, you can talk and say, oh, so-and-so did it first, but did they have an impact on the market? Did they have an impact on other developers? Not like Pitfall is one of the first and definitely the most influential.
So you don't think Cabbage Patch Kids Adventures in the Park deserves the first?
Well, yeah, that didn't come out until 1984 of the Cabbage Patch stuff. But it is so Pitfall, and I absolutely freaking love it. You may have never played it before, but I'm telling you, you got to fire up the Cabbage Patch Kids Adventures in the Park for the MSX, ColecoVision. Konami brought it. Konami brought their A game in 1984 for me to play some Cabbage Patch Kids Adventures.
And a lot of people tried to copy these games and get their piece of the pie. For example, Taito made a game called Jungle Hunt in 1982, which shared a lot of the common features of...
I loved Jungle Hunt. Did you ever play much Jungle Hunt?
I never played it once.
1983?
Including this week.
Dude,
going near this
thing. It is fantastic. I love Jungle
Hunt. Look at the physics on this jump from vine to vine.
It's terrible. It is terrible, but I probably, because I think maybe it's the reason why I didn't care much for Pitfall 2, because I'd went from Pitfall and then to Jungle Hunt, and then I didn't even play Pitfall 2 right away. I think it was like probably 85, 86 before I actually played it. But I used to love the little swimming stuff. I mean, swimming against those alligators, you had to hit them just right.
Yeah.
Also, a bad part, this is pretty common. A lot of these games where the flashes, mm-hmm. you would see the characters flash. NES was notorious about it.
Oh, the NES was the worst with the flashing. It was so bad.
Yeah. But Pitfall 1, Pitfall 2, my man David Crane kept it solid whole mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
He kept it tight.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys... So I don't know a lot of people know this about Activision. This is really interesting to me because I dealt... When I was doing the instance and certainly just over the last 16 years, a lot of coverage of Blizzard and Activision because they own them and all that. I didn't know this. In 1991, Bobby Kotick and a small group of investors that are hanging with him, they buy the company. They buy Activision for a mere $500,000.
Crazy, Bobby
That's
Kotick.
Nothing.
Crazy.
That game, I need to remind everybody that company was just bought by Microsoft today for $65 billion dollars.
Yeah.
Billion.
So, yeah. Dude,
I mean that's just kind of breathtaking. The difference
it is crazy. And okay, you can say what you want to about Bobby Kotick. He's and you probably have, but what a great deal! And they had already Activision had changed their stupid name. They didn't even recognize the value of their own name. They were a Mediagenic, and I'm like, what a horrible name.
Yeah.
With Activision, even back in the day, even after the video game crash, I still knew who Activision was. I still had fondness for Activision. Why would you blow that?
Yeah, that's nuts. It's real weird that they changed it. But they didn't know yet. Nobody knew what was what then. We don't know. They don't know about legacy and people thinking, oh, the name Activision means something. Like, nobody thinks about that.
Nobody
they do now, but
that.
They didn't then. Anyway, $500,000 is not even like...
I know. I can take out a loan for that, believe it or not. I probably could find some investors, and as poor as I am.
Yeah, you'd find a way.
I could manage that.
Yeah, you probably could. I'll tell you what, you make more than $500,000 a week on like World of Warcraft subs. Like, it's insane to me. I mean, we're obviously way down the road. 91 was a long time ago, but damn, dude.
But that's cheap for 91, man. I mean, that's freaking insane. I love it. But
it's too bad that Kotick's such a dick. I mean, think of the legacy you would have.
Yeah, it just proves that companies aren't people, but companies are led by people. And what a different time it was. Yeah. I don't know. Activision was something different. It was so good that I almost forget that at one point in time they were the good guys. They were the ones fighting. To get recognition for the creators of games.
Yeah,
unheard of at the time.
Yeah, unheard of at the time. Now they're resisting unions like it's the worst thing in their existence.
And so it's because it's only in name that Activision still exists. Yeah. It's not, there's nothing that was there before. The Activision that I love that used this logo, you know, and made these dumb games,
they don't
exist anymore.
That is what I like about Nintendo. They're kind of still there.
Yeah.
They're still
and they're
kind
dicks
of the
too,
thing.
But we know that
they're dicks, but they were dicks from the beginning in their own ways, right? Their own kind of dicks,
right?
But
we're
not
Nintendo haters or lovers here on Play Retro. We recognize they're good and they're evil because could we have recovered from, who fixed everything? Who came in and put the Band-Aid on after the 83 games crash? They did. They fixed it.
But then they turned right around and were dicks again because because anytime competition showed up, they got ruthless, man.
Yeah. Freaking and they didn't want to give their people, they don't want to give credit to nobody either. They're like the early games and stuff. It's like, nah, this ain't nobody's. This is ours.
This
Nintendo
is ours,
made
baby.
This.
Yeah. Oh, you want to stream it? Sorry, you're going to jail. Like, they're just weird.
Thought you was having a good night. Guess what? You're going to jail.
You thought you were having a good night. Well, that's really interesting, that whole thing.
Pitfall at one point in time, just a couple of more Pitfall things before we move on. Pitfall at one time was receiving 14,000 fan letters per week, including thousands of handmade maps. Activision had to hire a staff just to open them.
Jeez.
That is amazing and also something that we almost can't relate to now because who of us is going to write a letter that's not electronic?
Yeah, that isn't an email or something.
Because you can ignore the hell out of electronic email, right? Yeah. You can just go, hey, look at my account on my email. Mark all is red. Done. But you have 14,000 letters.
I would love to talk to a listener who sent a fan letter into Activision.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Oh, man.
To hear
if you ever
story.
Go to, okay, so let's give some love to a great community, Atari Age. They're such a powerful force of making sure that all things Atari, you know, are still around and, you know, cataloged and talked about and still lives and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And they do post stuff like that. I'll occasionally see people post like, oh, I got, you know, this is the letter I sent. And this letter that Activision sent back to me.
So I've been over there in a while. Kind of stuff, that is actually a really cool resource. I got to go click on it.
It really is.
Yeah, they have the most extensive Jaguar stuff. That stuff's so notoriously hard to find info on. It's not nearly as covered in big wikis and things. These guys,
big wiki.
Big wiki. I mean, the Jaguar was basically the Jaguar was Atari's Dreamcast in some ways. It was their last hurrah. It was their last chance to try to do something, and they freaking blew it. We got to do a Jaguar episode.
Oh, we're totally going to do a Jaguar. I've been kind of waiting till maybe at a time that maybe I can secure an Atari Jaguar. It's a tall order, but I've been working on it. I've been watching and trying to figure out where I can budget it. By the way, thank you to our patron supporters who makes all that possible, because when I go out there and look for crazy crap, I'm like, I bet I can afford an Atari Jaguar. Mm-hmm. I go, I can because of the patron supporters.
Yeah, of course. They can help us get all your weird retro crap. But here's the thing. Like, the Atari Jaguar had that CD add-on, and it made it look like a toilet. We got to get the toilet add-on, dude.
Yeah.
That thing was great.
I got to have it all.
Yeah, I want the toilet real bad. Anyway.
I got to have the toilet so bad, man. I got to have it.
I got to have that toilet. You mentioned earlier the, what was it? 64 weeks at the number one spot. Now, I want to make this clear. Pitfall wasn't 64 weeks at the number one game spot. They were number one software spot. That means everything that's considered software of any kind, this led the charge. So
isn't that crazy?
Your Lotus 1-2-3 or your WordPerfect or whatever the competing stuff was at the time. They were all taking a backseat to this effing video game.
Right. What would have been an 82 software? What would that be? Let's think. I'm trying to think, because I've been looking at dot matrix printers, and the only thing I ever used a dot matrix printer for.
Wait a minute. You're going to get a dot matrix printer? Hold on. Slow down.
No, I didn't say I was going to get one. I'm just saying the only time I've ever used a dot matrix printer was to print out happy birthday banners. Because everybody always is like, oh, you got an Oka data? Okay. I need you to print me out a banner, because that's what you did with dot matrix printers. Yeah. Now, in the finance departments and stuff, I'm sure there's a bunch of ledger stuff that people used it for real, though. Sure. Was it print shop? What was the deal back in 82? I'm trying to remember what I might have used in my C64.
And major computers, Okadata. Computer products. Let's see if I can find some software here.
It wasn't Windows, I'll tell you that. That wasn't on the software list.
No.
No, sir. Not in 82.
No, definitely not. DOS, probably, right? The SCSI standard came out in 82. That's interesting.
Right.
This SGI introduced the IRIX operating system, which didn't last very long. Oh, there it is. Microsoft rebranded a PC DOS, originally 86 DOS, to MS DOS in 1982. Version 1.25 was later released in that same year. So there's that.
Yeah.
So you'd have been Lotus 1-2-3, some early AutoCAD stuff.
I would have been on the Commodore 64 regardless.
The Vectrex
that would have been out. It would have been something written in BASIC.
The Vectrex came out that year.
Oh, Vectrex. We're going to get to that too. Ooh. Will Brian be able to find a Vectrex? Tune in next week.
Oh, I found
Brian
it.
Blows all of his Patreon money.
I found it. Here it is. Microsoft released Fortran, a programming language, for PC, COBOL for MS-DOS, and Multiplan for Apple II. They also released... here it is. WordPerfect Corporation introduced WordPerfect 1.0, a word processing program that became one of the most popular in the world at the time.
Right.
They lost all their poop to Microsoft eventually, but they helped pay for a guy, another Utah connection. Dude was from here and made so much money. He owns like half the state. Anyway, that would have been your competition. And Pitfall beats it all, baby.
That's right. Pitfall beat it all, man.
Crazy. All right. Let's move on to that's it. That's your pitfall. That's it. That's a pitfall.
Now, I know we probably missed some pitfall. I did try to go into the sixth generation. We tried to go into the GameCube this week because I got a little bit of crap from not going far enough last time. But yeah, I really enjoyed Pitfall. I just want to just sum up. I have a newfound love for Pitfall, and I'm not giving it up just yet until I complete all 255 screens on the Pitfall.
I have a love for the Mayan Adventure, and that's it. The rest of them kind of suck. Not my bag.
I don't know if I'll go back and play any of the later stuff. If I do, it will probably be the GameCube. It'll probably be the Genesis. If I go back, play that game.
It's a great game. Get the 32X version and freaking emulate that. It's great.
See, I gotta get a 32X. I don't have one. I've got to get one, and then I got to find the cart. I did see some carts out there for it when I was looking, but I got to get it.
You got to get the full tower, man. The whole tower. You got to have 32X. You got to have the CD. Yep. You got that whole stack. You got to do it.
Yeah.
You got
to
do it.
Has to do it.
Yeah. And then one of those tall ass cartridges with extra shit on it or whatever.
I'm going to have to stack, what's the thing you usually do? You put the Game Genie, and then you have the Sonic. With the Sonic add-on, the Sonic 2 and the Sonic add-on with Knuckles. Yeah, so you get that big old
amazing.
Giant.
It's amazing. We all need to do what you're saying right now.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the next thing, which is, guess our game. Check this out, you guys.
Destroy it.
We're going to play Guess Our Game, where we play audio from an old game, and then we try to guess what each other brought. Brian, my game's from 1993. Okay.
1993. What was I doing in 93?
I don't know.
All right. Me either.
What were you doing? I know what I was doing.
It was a dark time for the Dunaway household in 1993.
I was playing this, actually, a little bit, this game I'm about to play, and let's see if you can figure it out. Here you go.
I feel like I'm playing some kind of streets game.
Well, you're close. Now here's the actual gameplay.
I hear some basketball skirch.
Oh, do
you? Basketball skirch.
Hear some skirching? You're getting there then. I'll give you another hint. It was a multi-platform game available on both Genesis and the SNES Super Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah. So is this going to be is it going to be, oh, where did I put it?
It's not NBA Jam.
It's not?
Nope.
Is it one of the streets?
It's a street game, but it's not, doesn't have street in the name. Still nothing? You don't got, no guess in there?
Is it one of these? Point to the one that touched you.
Is there a basketball game in there?
Just NBA Jam, I think. Football, FIFA, Madden, PGA Tour. What do I have that for?
Golf, baby. Woo!
It's not a streets. Then what was the I can't think of the other one. I can't think of the other stupid one.
All right, I'll give you one more hint. It's got the name of a basketball player on it because that's how it was back then. They all kind of started getting their own games with their own names.
Shaq Fu.
Incorrect. Shaq Fu was not a basketball game, weirdly. So do you know? You got
the basketball player in it. I'm going to kick myself when you tell me, but give it to me.
It was called Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam.
Ah, daggummit.
Remember that?
I just looked at that recently, too. Daggummit.
Yeah, it's an okay game. It's no NBA Jam, but it tries to be, and it does an okay job. It's all right. It's not the word. Oh, does someone in the chat get it? Yeah, Barkley Shut Up and Jam. Someone, Woj Man. Woj Man.
Good job, Woj Man.
Good job, Woj Man. Or is it Woj Man? I don't know. All right, well, Brian, let's see if I fare any better. This is your clip from 1995. Anything else you want to say?
1995. Yeah, I don't want to tell you nothing because I already lost, so you gotta
struggle.
You know,
I gotta go running up that hill. Okay, here we go. Super Nintendo, right?
Super Nintendo.
Am I right?
Maybe.
It's totally that chip, I can tell.
Yeah, it is. But you're right, it is Super Nintendo. It is...
It's really familiar.
1995.
Yeah, that's info I already had. What else you got?
Right. Role playing.
Oh.
If Dice Tomato doesn't like yell it out in the chat room, I'd be shocked. Is Dice? I thought I saw Dice. No, maybe I didn't see Dice earlier. I thought I did.
I don't. Oh, so it's an RPG.
Dice has been trying to get me to do this forever.
Oh.
Whoop. I told you it was.
Oh, I know what it is. Shush. I know. It's, I just started this. Because John's been begging me to play it.
Yeah, I've heard John mention it too. They're diehard fans of this game, boy.
Yeah,
I figured.
Oh, my brain. The Square game called.
Square Soft then.
Yeah, it was Square Soft. There was no Square Enix yet. Or they hadn't bought Enix. They hadn't muted. Or they hadn't merged.
Merge.
Chrono Trigger.
Chrono Trigger.
And you know what?
Is
that correct?
The answer.
Okay. Here's the other reason I know it. This is the early goings where you're at that. You're at the carnival thing. Right?
Yep. I went early in the game because I wasn't sure about the later stuff because I wasn't sure how far you ever played in the Chrono Trigger.
I'm glad you did it when you did it because just last week I played that carnival sequence and that's why this is so familiar. So in a way I kind of cheated. That's fantastic.
Chrono Trigger.
I haven't played it ever in my life, but it's some people's all time and never got better than this video game. So
let me tell you about my best friend Chrono Trigger. Because I'm telling you, man, people, if they're into it, man, they want you to play. It's like crack.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you got to try just a little bit, man. Come on.
I wish they would do a complete remake of it the way they did Final Fantasy VII here recently because I've been playing that, remake. That remake is awesome. Yeah. It's so good.
Wait, didn't they? I thought they had something planned. Maybe.
No, they've done remasters for PC and stuff, but it's the same game. Like, I want like a bottom, like ground up remake of that game. And then I'll play
ground
it.
Up.
Yeah. Because I don't, you know. I mean,
April 12th,
as
it says, fans of the Chrono series rejoiced when Square Enix announced Chrono Cross, the Radical Dreamers edition, which was released last week.
That's their sequel. Yeah, the PlayStation 1 sequel. Oh. But it's okay. It's okay. It's a PlayStation 1 game, you know. Yeah. It's not a remake. It's it's widescreen now. Have fun.
And Square Enix orders two more HD 2D remakes. Oh. It's time for Chrono.
Oh, well, I don't want that. I want what they did with 7. I want, like, Final Fantasy 7 Remake. That's what I want on everything. So get on it. Square, get on it. You slow-ass mother effers. All right. Now this.
Welcome to the treasure room.
It's time for some Play Retro emails. PlayRetroShow@gmail.com is where we get these. We've got two this week that I'm going to read. One comes from Machete Games.
Machete.
I think it's pronounced that way because it's spelled not like machete or machete.
Well, I think you're right, though. I think it's Machete.
Machete Games. Anyway, he says, Scott and Brian, I have loved this new show. Followed since day one. You're both knocking it out of the park. Well, thank you very much, Machete, if that's your real name.
Thank you.
He says, quick question. Have either of you looked into the analog products, third-party console makers, the Super NT or Super NES, and the Mega SG or Genesis have gotten rave reviews, with the SG being many retro gamers' favorite. Unfortunately, they are quite pricey. I would love to see Brian in particular get one.
Why? Yeah, you would.
Why?
Yeah, you would, because you know Brian will make love to it, because Brian loves video games.
He'll put his
Scott's
wiener.
All like, Pitfall's old and stupid.
He'll put his wiener in it. That's what he'll do. His wiener will go in it.
Yeah, I get very excited about those things. And I've looked at the analog. Finish reading the email.
It says they both feature zero lag with 1080p output. Speedrunners usually run original consoles as lag with products like Retrocon is such an issue. I'm not sure. Because it's an issue there. I get it.
Right.
Wall jumping in Super Metroid is basically impossible as an example. Also, I wanted to point out, if your research didn't pop it up after last week's episode, but all of the developers of F-Zero were moved to Mario Kart. There are a couple of great YouTube documentaries on both F-Zero development and Mario Kart development. Really interesting stuff when coupled with the question that was brought up at Nintendo shareholder meeting last week. Seriously, someone bought a ton of stock from Nintendo and asked when the next F-Zero game is going to come out. I think we talked about it.
We did talk about it. Me and you talked about it. Did we talk about it?
Maybe we talked about it offline, but it's like guy bought like $45,000 in Nintendo stuff and then demanded an F-Zero game.
I love that idea that if you had enough money to throw, it's like, what do you want to do with your wealth? Well, I'm going to go cause a stink.
Yeah, I'm going to make a stink.
Where's my game at?
Yeah, I got money. I'm going to make a stink. Anyway, Machete Games, that's awesome. He says, love the show. Keep up the great work. So, Brian, back to this thing you want to put your wiener in. What do you want to say?
Now, I've been wanting to, ever since we started the show, I think even before when I was still just thinking about what was going to do the show, the Mega SG I was looking at because I didn't have a Genesis at the time, and this is one of the options. They are kind of pricey, about $190. I think I've seen them go up even further than that when it's actually in stock. I can't find any stock ever. I keep a lookout. I got the notify me when it's in stock on analog.co, but I haven't seen any of them pop up yet. I would really like to have one though, because it's just, you know, it's got everything.
Oh,
it's got
love one.
You just plug right into the HDMs to the eyes. You throw your carts in there. It uses real FPGA hardware instead of, you know, doing the software emulation. So this is what I was wanting to get before I was so kindly gifted with the Mr. FPGA.
Let me ask you
nice
this.
You were gifted that FPGA?
If anyone out there has any of these and you're like, I need to unload.
Mister.
I'm your guy. Okay?
Oh, Tonda has one, and he's saying, maybe I'll sell you mine, Brian. And Tonda.
Tonda Gosa, do you not even care about me at all anymore? Man. Bastards. All right. Let me ask you this. Can I buy one of those? This is not what I'm planning to do necessarily. Okay.
Or Scott says Tonda. Tonda give love Scott. Now Tonda loves Scott just because
I know he does. It's fine. Tonda loves Scott. But let me ask you this question. Can I get one of these and then go buy one of those 200 games on a cartridge things that are shaped like a Genesis cartridge on Amazon, and will it play in this thing?
That's a good question.
I'm doing it if it does. I'm doing it.
Lots of times, no. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying, like in my Retron 5 and those kind of things, I did pick up the 200 one. Now, if it was an EverDrive, that might work.
Chat room says it does.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure they're the end-all, be-all source on this, but the chat room says it works.
Oh, Tonda says yes. So, yeah, so I would believe Tonda. He has one, so there you go.
Shit. I want this so bad.
It so bad.
Whatever.
I can taste it in my butthole.
Does it come with a controller? I assume it does.
I see it paired with the SN, which the Sega, this one right here.
That's the M. Yeah,
all the ones. I don't know if it actually comes with it or if they're just recommending it.
Well, can I? Okay, let me see if I can buy it.
Controller not included, according to the write-up.
Boo. So.
That's just if you buy it directly from them, but that's the only way I think I know. But there is a fulfillment group going on with some of their stuff, but I don't see where they're doing it for the analog.
Oh, they're selling them there too, though. If I want to buy them right off the site, I could just buy the 8-bit Do controller for $24. That's
fine. Oh yeah, yeah. This is a great controller. If you don't have the M30, the Mega Drive M30 8-bit Do, I suggest you get one. It is freaking awesome. And it works with your. It's got the little. If you get the little plug with the little 9-pin plug, you can plug right into the front. By the way, I didn't learn something else this past week. Mm. You can plug a Sega Genesis controller into an Atari, and it will just work.
I hate
9-pin plugs.
I'd want these. I want both the Super NES and Genesis one of these. I want these so bad. Oh my gosh, look at this. Limited edition. What are we doing here? What is this?
Aren't they beautiful? They're so gorgeous. And they kind of have the shape. They kind of have the shape of the Sega Model 1. So it's and a little bit of the Model 2.
I'm so desirous. I'm all desirous now. I'm full of desire.
But people love these things.
Okay.
People love them.
Well, I'm going to love it too because I'm making this. I don't know how I'm making this happen. My wife's going to
come. I don't know either. I want that Super NT Black too. That's nice as well.
All right. Well, there's that. Here's an email from Jason Savage.
Oh, hi, Jason
Savage.
I'm Savage.
Sounds like a video game character from the 16-bit era.
Or a wrestler.
Or that. He says, I want to start this email by telling you guys how much I love the show. You both do a great job, and this is one of the three gaming podcasts I listen to on a weekly basis without skipping a single episode. Core is the other one of the two. I should probably consider Patreon at some point. Sure, dude. We'll take it. Says that out of the way. I listened to the F-Zero Wipeout episode yesterday. Guys, how the blue hell can you have an F-Zero episode and not even mention the best game in the series, F-Zero GX or AX?
I know, Jason.
Says, I still love you guys. I just want to bust your stones a bit. Play retro. Sincerely, Jason. Yeah, man. We totally spaced those other games.
I knew about it and I played a little bit before the show, but I was... wrongly, I think Jason's got it right here because I kept back and forth going, oh, 6th gen, I don't know if we should include that. But then we did a whole episode on the freaking Dreamcast, and I'm like,
we should have mentioned it. We should have at least mentioned, oh, by the way, the GameCube had them too, but we usually don't go that far up in time. So yeah. Yes, we missed that, and we it isn't that we thought they weren't being that there was never anything ever made. It's just, you know, we'd hit the soft ceiling of what we consider to be retro on that episode. But it's a fair point. We should have brought it up. And the GX series is pretty rad. Fact, you know what? Kind of make me want to play it, to be honest.
It's really good. Yeah. I told you, man. I just ordered some Picos for my Pico boot for my GameCube back there.
Check That's this right. out. F-Zero GX, successor to F-Zero X, that continues the series' difficult high-speed racing style, retaining the basic gameplay and control system of the N64 game, with a heavy emphasis on placed on track memorization and reflexes. GX introduces a story mode element where the player assumes the role of F-Zero pilot Captain Falcon.
Captain Falcon. It is best friend.
Chode Monkey.
Fred. Yep. Yeah, his best friend. I always think they're going to be calling him the Blue Falcon.
Blue Falcon.
And Dino-Mutt. Is that right?
Yeah, Blue Falcon and Dino-Mutt. That is correct, I think.
All right.
But we don't speak of them because they're terrible and the worst.
What? What are you talking about? Blue Falcon and what?
That's a bad time, dude. All that old, dude, that freaking Hanna-Barbera.
That is freaking fantastic, man. No, it's love to be some Blue Falcon.
It's animation vomit, those things. They're bad.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're bad.
First Pitfall and now you're decrying Dino-Mutt?
Look,
where's your soul, Johnson?
Listen, if someone sends me a Genesis and Super Nintendo analog console device,
you could be bribed.
I'll love whatever you tell me to love. I'll love it.
Oh my God.
I can
hilarious.
Be bought easily on today's episode. Easily. Speaking of episodes, go ahead.
My favorite thing ever was when Blue Falcon and Dino-Mutt made a guest appearance on Dexter's Laboratory.
I remember that.
The high point of my life.
That was more for my kids, but yes, I remember that. I watched more cartoons than they did then. I was so into that whole era of like...
Oh, me too.
Like, you know...
Still am.
Who's the dog on Nickelodeon that had the cow friend?
Oh, Courage. No, you're talking about cow... Oh, you're talking about what? Had a dog friend?
Yeah, no, the Australian dog. And he had a cow friend, didn't he? A friend that was a cow.
He wasn't a dog. You're talking about cow and chicken?
No, cow and chicken, different thing. Guys, what was it? It was an old Nickelodeon early on, Nickelodeon right around the same time.
Dog and
same
cow.
Time as Rocco's Modern Life. I couldn't remember it. Didn't he have a chicken? Or no, it was a cow.
He's a wallaby.
He's not a dog. He's a wallaby, but he has a cow. He has a cow
Sparky
best friend.
Is his dog. Oh my God. Nowhere I didn't know.
Yeah.
Nowhere
he had his
know.
Favorite. He had a cow friend, right?
Yeah. Heifer.
Heifer. Heifer. That's right.
Yeah.
I used to love that shit.
You are killing me, man.
I can't remember names.
Did I ever tell you I talked to you? I got to do a great interview. Still, it should be on. Should still have Comics Coast to Coast. I'm trying to look.
Yeah, the feed's still there. It's on there, right?
If it should be there. Let me see.
It's got to be on there.
But I got a chance to talk to Joe Murray. Lifelong. I love Joe Murray so much.
Joe Murray's awesome. Yep, he's great.
Yeah, I got a chance to talk to him, and that just made my life right
there. Did you ever talk to the Courage Cowardly Dog guy? Because I love that show, too.
I didn't, because that is a good show, though. I do like... Courage is really overlooked.
Dude, Courage both haunted and delighted my daughters.
What do you think about Ed, Edd n Eddy?
I loved Ed, Edd n Eddy.
Yeah, next week on Play Retro, we're going to do all the Nickelodeon and cartoons from Game Boy Advance. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, let's do it. All of it will happen tomorrow. Next week, I mean, not tomorrow.
Hey,
here's what we're really doing next week. We're finally going to talk about Mega Man, damn it. Mega Man. The beginnings, the early goings. Wait, didn't we? We haven't done Mega Man, right?
We talked it. I don't think so, because I have never really played Mega Man much. I haven't played much Mega Man.
Much Mega Man has not
I have
been played
not.
By
oh my
you.
God. Balmy, if you're listening, we need a Play Retro quick LI.
Yeah, we do, because I'm starting to have that film sack feeling. Did we already
in,
do that one?
Episode 26. And we're already going, hey, wait
a minute.
Didn't we already cover that?
Here, I'm going to look real quick and tell you.
I think we've talked about it a bunch of times. We've never actually played, because I would remember that, because I've always wanted to dig in deep. on Mega Man, and I never have. Maybe you're thinking of Bomberman.
You know what? That is what I'm thinking of. We did Bomberman. You're right. Yeah. Yep. I'm totally thinking of that. Yes, we're doing Mega Man. That's right. Dr. Wily and all his stupid things he says, like...
That's a good question.
If you're listening to Corey, you've heard that a bunch, but that's Dr. Wily.
That's a good question.
He's just the worst. Mega Man, a storied series from Capcom. Everyone loves Mega Man to some degree, and we'll talk about all of it and whether or not Mega Man has a future. I don't know.
I hope I can get into it. Like I said, I didn't think I would be on a first name basis with Pitfall Harry, but he's changed my mind. So yeah. Maybe Mega Man can do the same.
That's going to do it for us. Don't forget, you can support us on our Patreon. Please do. For those of you who have, we are indebted to you because you're all amazing. I want to give some people some credit, actually, for being great supporters of our Patreon. Since last episode, Brent joined us. In fact, today he joined us this morning.
Rockstar.
Scott Lemke and Alan, all brand new patrons. You guys are the bomb. Thanks for being in here. And if you haven't already joined up, check it out. It's July. Great time to get some great benefits. Thinking about adding a top tier one, some retro art stuff. Okay. I gotta talk to you about it. But I have some ideas. Anyway, that's all coming up soon. If you want to find out more, check it out. Patreon.com/playretro. For everything else, it's playretro@gmail.com. It's playretroshow on Twitter. And as always, playretro on frogpants.com/playretro. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, for all of you. We'll see you next time. Go play something retro.
Mega Man. Mega Man. Mega Man.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Giant demon jaguars.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.